Okay, so our topic for today is the mitzvah of speaking Hebrew and the question of the value of modern Hebrew specifically. Normally I translate the sources, but when I sat down to do this, A, I was really busy, and B, it felt really strange. We'll see, some of the sources here, it feels really strange to translate into English. So hopefully we'll be okay with it, and we'll see. So you'll see, the source that really convinced me that I couldn't translate it is number 6, but we'll get to it in a minute. Okay. So starting with source one, so the first source is a very well-known midrash that appears in several places, Midrash Rabbah. It says that the reason the Jewish people were redeemed from Mitzrayim, among other things, because they didn't change their language. Rav Huna b'shem, Amar b'shem bar kapara, b'shvil arba dvarim nigalu Yisrael mi-Mitzrayim, because of four things, the Jews were redeemed from Egypt, shloshinu es shmam v'slo shonam, they didn't change their names or their language, v'lo amru lashon hara, v'lo nimtza b'nein echad men parutz be'erva, and they didn't speak lashon hara, and they weren't involved in promiscuity. In other versions, you have that they didn't change their clothing. You never actually have all three together, but in midrashim that we have, there seems to be a midrash flowing around that has name, language, and clothing, because the Rishonim have it, but we don't have it in our texts. But at least one of the things that they didn't change was their language. So that's an agadic statement that tells us that there's a value to speaking lishonam, whatever lishonam means. And it can mean one of two things, meaning it presumably meant Hebrew, but it can still mean one of two things. It can either mean Hebrew, like Lashon Kodesh, per se, or it can mean the Jewish language, which, as we'll see, will become a point of contention, which exactly it's referring to. But that's not, in and of itself, not a halachic source. So let's see a potential halachic source for the value of speaking Hebrew. So this Sifrayan source too, commenting on the pasuk of Lomatem Osam Es Veneichem, that you should teach your children Torah. So the Sifrei writes as follows, Mikan Amru. So based on this pasuk, we say, Kishatino Gmatzchil Ledaber, when a child starts learning Torah, starts speaking rather, Aviv Midaber Imo B'Lashon HaKodesh, so his father should speak to him in Lashon HaKodesh, in the holy tongue, Umelamdo Torah, and teach him Vim Ein Midaber Imo B'Lashon HaKodesh, and then adding to that halachic claim, it adds a level of threat. And if he doesn't speak to him in the holy tongue, Vein Umelamdo Torah, and he doesn't teach him Torah, Ra'ui lo ki'ilu kovro, it's as if you buried him, Shne'emar ulumatem osam es veneichem, l'daber bam, you teach your children to learn it, im l'matem osam es veneichem, if you teach them, the end of the parsha is l'man yirbu yameichem v'mei veneichem, so that your children will live im lav l'man yiktziru yameichem, which implies if you don't teach them Lashon HaKodesh, their lives will be shortened. Shekach divrei Torah nidrashim michal hein lav u'michal lav hein, because you learn in Hebrew, in Torah what is implied, right? If you do X, then this will happen, which implies if you don't do X, the opposite will happen. So if learning Torah and speaking Hebrew will lengthen your life, then not learning Hebrew and not learning Torah will shorten your life. So the Sifrei clearly does think that there is some sort of obligation to at least learn and understand Lashon HaKodesh. Whether this is true halacha is unclear, because the version of this drasha that appears in the Bavli in source 3 does not include this obligation. So this is the parallel in the Bavli. It says, Yodeh ledaber, when your child knows how to speak, Aviv lomdo Torah kriyat Shema, the father should teach him Torah and Shema. Torah mayhi, and what does Torah mean? Amar Avam Nuna, you should start with Torah tzivalanu Moshe marasha kilat Yaakov. Tell him that we got the Torah from Moshe. It was given over to the congregation of Israel. So at first glance, what we would have is a dispute between the Sifrei, which thinks there is a mitzvah to learn Lashon HaKodesh, and the Bavli, which doesn't. And since our Psak normally follows the Bavli against the Midrashei Halacha, especially when the Bavli seems to explicitly not say, right, go out of its way not to say what the Sifrei is saying, we would say that there is no per se mitzvah. There might be some sort of value to learning Lashon HaKodesh, but it wouldn't be obligatory. However, if you look in source 4, so the Mishnah in Avot says, "V'havei zahir b'mitzvah kala kevachamura she'ein ata yodeh matan scharan shel mitzvot." The Mishnah says you should be careful about light mitzvot like heavy mitzvot, because you don't know the reward of mitzvot. And the Rambam, well, I should just note that he, in the Mishneh Torah, records the version of this statement from the Bavli and not the Sifrei, meaning he excludes from the obligation to learn Lashon HaKodesh. Here in the Perush HaMishnayot, in 5, he says, Ra'oi lizaher b'mitzvah sheyichashev ba shehi kala. It's important to be careful in mitzvot that people think are unimportant, kigon simchat haregel, like celebrating on chag, ulimida lashon hakodesh, and learning lashon hakodesh, you should be as stringent about these mitzvot as you are with mitzvot, where we explicitly know how stringent they are, kemo mila v'tzitzit u'shchitat pesach, like circumcision and wearing tzitzit and the karban pesach. So the Rambam here compares learning Lashon HaKodesh to 4 other biblical obligations, which implies that he rules, at least here, like the Sifrei, against the simple read of the Bavli, and thinks there's actually a biblical mitzvah to learn Lashon HaKodesh. Now, number 6 is the reason that I just felt I couldn't translate the sources. Right. In addition to whatever obligation the Rambam thought there was, he thought there was an added value to learning Hebrew, which simply that Hebrew, he thought, was beautiful. And this was a letter that someone wrote to him asking him, please translate the Mishneh Torah into Judeo-Arabic. Now, that was the spoken language of the time. So they say, translate the Mishneh Torah into Judeo-Arabic so people can understand it. And he says in his letter, Ve'eni wrote, said, Bishum Panim Lotzi Lashon Aravi, I can't do it. I can't write it in Arabic. Shekol Ni'imut Yipaseid Valti Vakesh Zot Mimeni Klal. If I translate it from Hebrew, it loses all its beauty. Please don't ask me to do that. Right? So in addition to whatever obligation he thought there was, he said it loses the beauty of the language. So this is where I said, at least if I'm giving a shir on the value of Lashon HaKodesh, we will just look at the Hebrew in the original. The irony, of course, is that this is a translation of his letter, which was in Arabic, but that is parenthetical. So what we have so far is the Sifrei seems to think there is an obligation. The Rambam in the Perush Mishnayos seems to think that it's true, but in Mishneh Torah he seems to read the simplest read of the Bavli and think that there is no specific mitzvah to learn Lashon HaKodesh. And this continues this dispute. And if you look in 7. The Rav Yerucham Fishel Perla, this is the Perush HaRasag, this is actually Rav Sajigon. Normally when people quote Rav Sajigon, they don't mean Rav Sajigon, they mean Rav Yerucham Fishel Perla's commentary on Rav Sajigon, because Rav Sajigon only wrote a poem of the mitzvot, which Rav Yerucham Fishel Perla then used to understand different legal principles. But this is actually the commentary of the Rasag to Sefer Nehemiah, which I don't actually have, but in the Tshuvos Mishnah Halachos, he quotes this from Rasajigon. And Rasajigon writes, Kol sheino lomed lashon hakodesh veino medaber bar over ba'asei shalomatem osam. Anyone who doesn't teach his children Hebrew, lashon hakodesh, violates the positive command of ulematem osam, teach your children Torah and Hebrew, v'chol medaber lashon hakodesh b'shibush, and anyone who speaks improper Hebrew, over below sase, violates a negative commandment divrei Kabbalah, v'lo ke'arbaim, and gets lashes. Right,
Hebrew teacher who fails to teach their students proper Hebrew, what happens?
I don't even want to know. So this, I believe Rav Sajigon is the only person to take this position, but Rav Sajigon takes it a step further and thinks that if you speak incorrect Hebrew, that is a lashes-worthy biblical violation. So he again sides with the Rambam in the Perush HaMishnayos. The Yerushalmi as well has the Sifrei in 8. Yodeh l'daber aviv milamdo lashon Torah. When a child knows how to speak, you teach him the language of Torah. Now, this Yerushalmi may be the key to why Rishonim were comfortable poskening against the Bavli. Because if we look back, the Bavli doesn't actually say that you don't, it doesn't say anything about Hebrew. We're just assuming that since the Bavli has the Sifrei in front of it, right? The Sifrei is like one of the basic Tanaitic texts. We assume that if the Bavli copies that which exists in the Sifrei and leaves out a phrase, it's probably doing that on purpose. It has an alternate tradition than that of the Sifrei. But the Yerushalmi conflates the Talmud Torah and the Lashon HaKodesh part and says, you teach him the language of Torah. So, it may be that the Yerushalmi, and this, we'll come back to this just in a minute, right? If there is a mitzvah, why is there a mitzvah? But the Yerushalmi, by conflating the Torah phrase and the Lashon phrase, may be implying that those are actually the same thing, so maybe even the Bavli agreed to that. And learning the language of Torah, i.e. Lashon HaKodesh, is itself part of Torah, and therefore the Bavli didn't even have to say it. And Rashi also seems to think this. Rashi in 9 says, Mikan Amru, Kishatinok Maschil Daber, when a child begins speaking, Aviv Mesiach Imo B'Lashon HaKodesh U'Melamdo Torah, his father should begin speaking to him in Lashon HaKodesh and teach him Torah. So again, you have, despite the fact that the Bavli doesn't explicitly say there is a mitzvah, you have the Rambam in the Perush Mishnah, though not in the Mishnah Torah, Rav Sajagon, and Rashi, all arguing that there is, in fact, a positive and maybe even a negative commandment to learn Lashon HaKodesh. Now, the Torah Tamima was bothered. If, in fact, the Rambam thinks that there is a mitzvah to learn Lashon HaKodesh, then why didn't he mention it in Mishnah Torah? Right? He mentions it in Perush Mishnah, but he doesn't mention it in Torah. So we'll see his explanation, but this will also lead us to the second question, which is, if there is a mitzvah, what is the nature of the mitzvah? Right? We've explained, is there, isn't there, but why should there be a mitzvah? Well, you know, before we actually look at it inside, right? Why would there be a mitzvah to learn Lashon HaKodesh? Right, assuming there is, right? Why would there be a mitzvah to learn Lashon HaKodesh?
Enables other mitzvahs of learning Torah.
Right, so one, and this is what some people point out from the Yerushalmi, is that maybe it's simply because it is the prerequisite to learning Torah in the original. And that, right, so that could be the secret of the Yerushalmi's formulation. And if you skip down to 14, that's where the Torah Tamima writes, Uvitam hadavar nira pashut, the reason there's a positive commandment to learn Lashon HaKodesh, Kidei shavin mashi daber b'kriyat shema v'Torah, so you can understand what you're davening, what you're learning. It's written in Lashon HaKodesh, you need to understand it. So that's one possibility. Now what's another possibility? Or why else might it be a mitzvah to speak in Lashon HaKodesh?
I think it's an organic matter that You're within the same natural environment as the Torah.
I mean, so it's not so that you can learn Torah; it's so that you.
It's more of a natural thing that your entities are similar with respect to language.
Right.
Your beings are similar.
Right. So that right. That's a very Wittgensteinian idea, but
I don't even know what that means.
Right, but Wittgenstein, right, who like was the father of philosophy of language, right? But one of the things he notes is that right, the language that we speak, it isn't just the way we interpret it. The language we speak actually affects how we understand things, right? Without even realizing it. The example I once gave people was from one of my cousins. One of my cousins in Israel. She was born. I think she was actually born in America, but she moved when she was like one. She's Israeli, totally Israeli, but she grew up speaking English, so she knows English very well, but still, she's Israeli, so she thinks in Hebrew. Her husband is American, he's from Muncie. And she said that despite the fact she grew up speaking English at home, the fact that she speaks in Hebrew means that when her husband says, I love you, she doesn't really identify with that emotionally, because Hebrew, ohev, means both like and love, and there's no unique word for love. And therefore she can't, even though she knows there's a difference between the words and she knows what he's trying to do, she can't actually bring herself to feel love based on the word love, because in Hebrew the distinction doesn't exist. Right? So I use this as an example that right, it's not so much that you needed to learn Hebrew, it's that if you're thinking in the world of Hebrew, right, your actual thought patterns will be patterned the way the Torah is. And that may be what the Rambam is getting at. Both the Rambam and the Ramban bring things like this. If you look, for example, in 15, so the Rambam in the Mor Nevuchim, right, this is originally in Arabic, so I just put the English translation because I don't know the Arabic. The Rambam says, why is Lashon HaKodesh called Lashon HaKodesh? The Rambam writes, I have also a reason and cause for calling our language the holy language. Do not think it is an exaggeration or error on my part. It is perfectly correct The Hebrew language has no special name for the organ of generation in females or in males, nor for the act of generation itself, nor for semen, nor for secretion. The Hebrew has no original expressions for these things, and only describes them in figurative language and by way of hints. The Rambam writes, what is Lashon HaKodesh? It is the language which has no explicit words for sexuality, for relieving oneself, right, for any of the explicit bodily functions. It doesn't have a word for it, and therefore you are forced to think of, to express it in sort of a roundabout way, and that shapes the way you think. You become more sensitive. I was reading a book recently in preparation for this year called Sacred People, Sacred Speakers, Sacred Tongues, something like that. It's a someone's dissertation. It's a very dry read. Interesting. It's a linguistic, anthropological study of the Haredi community's approach to language in Israel, written by someone who used to be a biochemist. And it feels like it's being written by a scientist, right? So it's a dry read, but it is interesting that he notes that even when they're speaking Yiddish, or they're speaking modern Hebrew, which both, you know, have explicit words, they take this Rambam idea as normative, and they don't use the modern words. They use these, you know, euphemisms, right? Because they think that if the value of Lashon HaKodesh is that it lacks those explicit words, so then there's a positive value in avoiding the modern Hebrew additions. And we'll come back to what this might mean for the sanctity of modern Hebrew. But before we even get to that, right? This may be, right, going in the direction that Moshe is going, right? That the reason there's a value to learning Lashon HaKodesh or thinking and speaking in Lashon HaKodesh is because it shapes the way you think. For the Rambam, the way it shapes how you think is by not allowing you to think explicitly about certain bodily functions. The Ramban might also be going in this direction, though in a very different approach. And he says, "Shehu mipnei shedivrei." This is 16. Shehu mipnei shedivrei Torah v'hanivuot v'kol divrei kedusha kulam b'lashon ha'unem. The reason it is a holy language is simply because that is what the Torah and the prophets wrote in. Right. So, as Moshe is saying, simply it becomes your culture, your world is the world of the Torah, is the world of prophecy. V'inehu ha-lashon sh'HaKadosh Baruch Hu yit'ale shemo midaber bo. It's the language of God himself. It's the language he speaks, im nevi'ah, v'imadato, with his prophets and with his people, anochi v'lo yelecha, when God himself spoke. The first two Dibrot, he said it in Lashon HaKodesh, Ushar Dibrot HaTorah V'Nevuah, and the rest of the Dibrot by Moshe, and the rest of the Torah and all of prophecy, Ubo Nikra B'Shmotav HaKadoshim, and even God's names themselves are in Lashon HaKodesh, Kael, Elokim, Tzvakot, Shakai, V'Yudhei, V'Hashem HaGadol V'Hamyuchad, Uvover Olamo, and with it he created the world, Ukara Shemot Shamayim, V'Eretz V'Kol Asher Bam, he created the world, U'Malacha, V'Kol Tzvav, V'Kulam, B'Shem Yikra, Michael, Gavriel, B'Lashon Ahu, the angels are called by these names, Ubo Kara Shemot LaKadoshim, Asher Ba'aretz, Abraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Shlomo, V'Zulatam, and he calls the Holy One's names by this, and now he rejects the Rambam, or he quotes the Rambam, and then he says, "V'nei in tzoruch l'tamze." I don't need what the Rambam said. Kedavar barur shalashon kodesh kadashim hu kemo sheperashti. Hebrew is holy, as I said. V'atam sheizker al dati enel emet. It's just not true. Ki mashi chanu yishgalena yishgavena yorekim yishgal sheimetzem libiila. So there is a word in Hebrew. It's called mishgal. Mishgal means the sexual act. That's what it is, right? The reason that when we read the Tochacha, we don't actually say yishgalena, we say yishgavena, proves to you that yishgalena itself is an explicit word. That's why we avoid it when we read it, but that means the Lashon HaKodesh has it. V'chein yakenu le'achol et choreihem, kishem migunera. This discusses hemorrhoids, right? He points out there are explicit words for uncomfortable things within Hebrew, within Lashon HaKodesh, and therefore they can't be it. So, from the Rambam and the Ramban's respective understandings of why Lashon HaKodesh is holy, right, they both, if we would go from their explanation of why it's holy to why it might be a command to speak it, right, go from the explanation to the normative, we might end up with two different ways of saying what Moshe said, that either Hebrew being your language means that you don't think as explicitly about certain physical acts, or your world is the world of prophecy, is the world of Torah, and that itself is valuable. So that's, I think, you know, explanation, let's say, 2A and 2B. Now, what's another reason why Hebrew, Lashon HaKodesh, might be a mitzvah to learn and speak Lashon HaKodesh? Right, so we have one, right, that it allows you to learn Torah, another that it, right, allows you to think about sexuality in other physical ways the way the Torah wanted you to, or it allows you to be in the milieu of God and the prophets, right? What's another possibility?
What the Midrash said.
Which is?
It's our own, creates an identity.
Jewish identity. So another possibility is that it's not Lashon HaKodesh per se. It's part of a larger obligation to remain separate from the non-Jews, so we should have our language. And that's the position of the Smag. What?
Like the French in Quebec.
Yes, exactly. Exactly like the French in Quebec. So if you look at 13, so in 13, the Bach quotes the Smag, and he says, King Gaz of a Smag, Lavin Nun, Mazir Sheheya Yisrael Muvdal Menagoyim, Bim Malbush, Bim Minhag, Bidibur. Right, there's an obligation which we call bechukos teyem lo teilechu, don't go in the ways of the non-Jews. And the Smag says, what is one of the things you can't do? Speak like them. So that is possibility three. One more possibility, let's say that's 3A. 3B, right, would be not that it keeps us separate from the non-Jews, right, not the negative, but maybe the positive spin on it, that it allows us to create a positive identity. The Tartmima in 10 implies a direction like this, though he suggests that it might only be true in Israel. And he writes like this, V'ulai, he's trying to explain why the Rambam didn't count Lashon HaKodesh in Mishneh Torah as a mitzvah. So he suggests, Ulai Sviralei de'ein mitzvah zo noheged rak be'eretz Yisrael ve'eitche Yisrael shruyina ad matan. Maybe it only applies when you're in Israel, because there you're creating a national identity, and part of creating a national identity is having a language. Masha Enkin, begalotenu shu davar she'efshar l'rova tzibur la'amod bo. But you can't really do that. You can't create an identity like that and live amongst yourself and only have your own language when you're in Galus. So maybe, right, this I think is maybe the positive flip, right, sort of reflection of the Bach, of the Smag. The Smag says it's to keep us separate for the Torah Tamima, which ironically might be more important when we are in Galus. Right? The Torah Tamima is saying, no, maybe it's part of creating a national identity, not a Jewish identity, a national Jewish identity specifically, and therefore might only apply in Israel. Right? The, I don't know if I put this. Right, I actually didn't put this tshuva of Moshe Feinstein, but Moshe Feinstein suggests, not on the language one, but on using Jewish names, but it's the same midrash he's commenting on, that maybe if it's about a Jewish identity, it was only a mitzvah in Mitzrayim before Matan Torah. But once you have Torah, our identity is forged around Torah. So things like Jewish names and Jewish language might be important, but they aren't as important as they were before we had Torah, and therefore they're not obligatory, right? So that might be another sort of, you know, sub-sheet on this possibility. So we have three basic positions. Either it's a function of Talmud Torah, or it's about creating a framework of a way of thinking, or it's about Jewish identity, either in the positive or the negative.
In three, I can see also a practical application, like it's to bring everybody to a standard, be able to have a siddur.
Correct, but we'll come back to three in just 1 minute. Now, just to show other people who thought that it wasn't a mitzvah, right? Meaning, we noted that the simplest understanding of the Bavli is that there isn't a mitzvah. Now we've explained why there might still be a mitzvah, but there were some people who really thought there wasn't. For example, in 11, and this is a deal pointed out by Riv Gershuni in his Sefer called Sofecha, based on Ashelas Yaivitz. Rav Yaakov Emden was asked the following question. Are you allowed to learn Hebrew grammar in the bathroom? Right? Or whatever they call it in Canada, the washroom, the, right? It's, right. This is like one of those things I will never get over. Fine. So he says, I think it's permitted because we say you're allowed to speak in Lashon HaKodesh things which are not holy, Ibra, but maybe not. It says Lididan Mistabra Lisur. I think it's forbidden. Kevin Shein Derech Lagieli Adiat Lashon Hakodesh Al Nachon Came Al Piaktuvim Asher Yoru Beetzba Al Kolei Adikduk. Because how do we learn biblical Hebrew and biblical grammar? Through the Bible. So there's a practical problem, because if you are understanding, if you're trying to understand Hebrew biblical grammar, what you're going to do is you're going to open up a Tanakh. So when you're learning biblical grammar, you're going to keep thinking in your head, Vayomer Hashem Moshe Lemor. Vayomer is a, right? The vav is a vav haipuch, so it's future tense, which then flips back to past tense, right? Yomar should be future, vav makes it past, and you're going to end up thinking of the Torah. So it's a technical problem. That's how we learn biblical Hebrew, through the Bible. It's not a spoken language. And therefore, you can't learn biblical grammar without thinking about the Torah itself, so you can't learn it in the bathroom. And the Kol Sofecha, the Rav Gershuni, points out that obviously Rav Yaakov Emden thought it wasn't a mitzvah. If it was a mitzvah to learn Lashon HaKodesh, he would have said, it is a mitzvah to learn Lashon HaKodesh, and therefore you shouldn't do it in the bathroom, just like you don't learn Hebrew, you don't learn Torah in the bathroom. The fact that he had to say, no, you might end up thinking of Torah, implies this itself is not Torah, it's not independently a mitzvah. Rav Moshe Feinstein as well, in 12, argues that it's a value, but it's not a mitzvah. Shechazinan, she'afshu mitzvah l'davar l'shon ha'kodesh k'diyisa. Mikol makom eino iser d'kol yisro medam l'shon ha'chol. He said there's a mitzvah, there's a value to speak l'shon ha'kodesh, but it's not forbidden to speak other language, because everyone does it. That's when people always did. Right? She'eino iser d'kol yisro medabrim l'shon ha'chol she'omot mizman she'galinu mechateinu bein ha'umot. We always spoke since we went into Galus. And even the right Gedolim didn't speak in Lashon HaKodesh. And since it's not really a prohibition, it's just a nice thing to do, it's important, but it's not a mitzvah, so therefore all our yelling and screaming won't help, and people are not going to speak Lashon HaKodesh. And so you have those who think that it is a mitzvah, those who think that it is not. But everyone agrees that there is some value, right? No one's going to argue. The question here is formally, is there a mitzvah or not? But everyone agrees that it is valuable. A few other just pieces of evidence in addition to the question, is it a mitzvah or not, the halachic significance of Lashon HaKodesh. So in 17, the Shulchan Aruch is dealing with the halacha of what you're allowed to read and not read on Shabbos. So he says, Melitzoto Mishalim Shal Sichat Chulin V'divrei Cheshek. Stories and romance novels, Kigon Sefer Emmanuel, like the book Emmanuel, which it's one of these ironies of history, Sefer Emmanuel, that Sefer Emmanuel, no one would know what Sefer Emmanuel was if it weren't for the Shulchan Aruch said it is forbidden to read Sefer Emmanuel, to the point where if you look on Wikipedia, it will say Sefer Emmanuel is a book of romantic poetry which received harsh criticism from Rabbi Yosef Karo, and that is the only identification you have. If it weren't for that, we would have nothing. But he doesn't like Sefer Emmanuel. V'kein Sefer Melchamot and books of wars, asur lekrot bahem b'Shabbat. The Rama writes, V'nire l'dakdek, that which we say it's forbidden to read secular, mundane things in books of wars, that's only if they're written in non-Lashon HaKodesh. But if it's written in Lashon HaKodesh, it is permitted. And the Magen Avraham in 19 says, why are you allowed to read secular novels in Lashon HaKodesh on Shabbos? Says the halashon ba'atzmo yesh bo kidusha velo made mimenu divrei Torah, because the language itself is holy, and you learn Torah simply by learning the language, even if you're not directly learning Torah, and therefore even secular matter is going to be permitted. Now, I find this very hard to accept, that this is true, right? That there should be any difference. If you think it's us or it's us, or if you think it's mutter, and Lashon HaKodesh shouldn't make a difference. The Rama and the Mogen Avraham thought that there was a difference, but many Acharonim did not. So this is only a potential nafkamina. If you look at 19, Mishnah Berurah just summarizes. Many acharim say this is wrong. Va'osrin, they forbid it. V'chemu gam kein dat hagra. Lufize gam b'garet shalom. May nafkamina ben lashon lazu ben lashon hakodesh. Therefore, secular letters, things that you can't read. Again, we're not going to get into what it is lahalacha you can and cannot read. But whatever it is you can't read whether it's in lashon hakodesh or in another language. However, there are other achronim who do take similar stances. If you look, for example, in 20, the pre Megadim rules this way. He says, Hichmir b'lashon hakodesh gam kein asur. He thinks like the Mishnah Berurah. Really, the Mishnah Berurah rules like him, that it's forbidden to read these forbidden things even in Lashon HaKodesh. But he says, Mu b'chol kishektuvim b'lashon HaKodesh dan abach delave moshav leitzim. But even though he thinks that it's true that you can't read forbidden things on Shabbos, he thinks that during the week, things that would be considered moshav leitzim, right, would be basically worthless and therefore forbidden during the week, will become valuable if it's in Lashon HaKodesh. So he still accepts this notion that something being written in Lashon HaKodesh independently gives it some value. In 21, the Aruch HaShulchan also accepts the Ramah, or sort of accepts the Ramah, but he doesn't accept the conclusion of the Magen Avraham, that the reason that you can read secular literature in Lashon HaKodesh on Shabbos is because it's a holy language. He just says a technicality, that the reason that you can't read whatever you can't read on Shabbos is a gzeira mishum shtarei hedyotot, because we're worried that if you read certain things, you'll end up reading contracts and things which are, right, business related and things like that. And he said most people didn't write contracts in Lashon HaKodesh, and therefore it didn't make sense to make a gzeira. Right, so it was a technicality that since most people wrote their contracts in whatever language they wrote it in, and you know, in English or German or whatever they wrote it in, and they didn't write it in Lashon HaKodesh, so they didn't make a gzeira on it. But it's not about the holiness of the language. So you see that there are some people who think that the holiness of the language allows you to read it on Shabbos, even though if you wouldn't be able to otherwise. But other people think that's not the case. So that's one potential other ramification of this. The Divrei Yatziv in 22 just notes that this entire discussion on Shabbos only makes sense if you think that the reason you can't read shtarei hedyotot is because it might lead to reading business things and the like. If you think the reason that you're not supposed to read secular literature or whatever it is you can't read is because you're supposed to actively be learning Torah, then obviously learning it in Lashon HaKodesh won't help you because you're still not learning Torah. So he just notes that would control this discussion a little bit. Another example of the halachic implications of the holiness of Lashon HaKodesh in 23, the Shulchan Aruch writes that when one has to take a vow, so normally a severe vow, what we call Nikitat Chefetz, you have to take a Sefer Torah or a mezuzah or something with the name of God. But the Shulchan Aruch says that might not be true. He says, maybe all you need to do is take something with Hebrew letters, block letters, right? The type of lettering in the Torah. Or even if it's an Aleph Bet chart. That might not have enough holiness to allow you to take a vow on it. It will be a legitimate vow if you make a vow simply holding the Hebrew letters. So again, you see this notion that it has this kiddusha. The last one we'll see before we move to a different aspect of this is in the Be'er Halacha, quoting from Ritva. And I'll summarize it outside, and then we'll see it inside. So in many areas of Halacha, we say that if you don't understand Lashon HaKodesh, you're allowed to perform the mitzvah in another language. And if you don't understand davening, you're allowed to daven in English. If you don't understand the Megillah, you're allowed to read the Megillah in English. So the Mishnah Berurah asked the question based on the Ritva, well, what happens if someone doesn't understand Lashon HaKodesh? Right, so does he fulfill his obligation of, let's say, hearing the Megillah if he hears it in Lashon HaKodesh and he doesn't understand it? And the flip side, what if you don't understand English, but you're in a minyan where everyone else understands English but not Lashon HaKodesh, so they chose to read the Megillah in English, but you only speak French? Can you fulfill your mitzvah based on that? Right, so what would you think? Right, in both cases, if you don't understand Lashon HaKodesh, can you fulfill your mitzvah? And if you don't understand English and they're reading in English, can you fulfill your mitzvah?
It seems that if you can read the Megillah in English in order that people must understand it, then they must understand it. So good. If that person only understands French and they don't understand Hebrew or English, then no, they're not Yotzi.
Okay, and now what about the flip side?
I think they would be.
And you think they would be. And that's in the Mishnah Berurah rules. Now why? Right, why would you fulfill your mitzvah in Hebrew if you don't understand Hebrew?
Because of the essence of
it. Right, because it's special. So that's basically what the Mishnah Berurah says. He says, "Vida, b'pshitos." It seems to me obvious. To os and dvarim ha'ne'emar m'chol lashon. When we say you can fulfill your obligation in any language, hudafkam anshe os ha'medina v'dabrin kach. When you say you can fulfill the Megillah, let's say, in English, it's only if you speak English. Avam anshe medina einam yecholin l'daber ze'al lashon. But if you can't speak English, you can't. V'rak he goes farther. He thinks if you understand English, but you're in France, you might not even be allowed to say it in English, because it might be that it needs to be the country where you speak English. Okay, we don't necessarily have to assume like that. But the basic point is clear. He thinks if you don't understand English, you can't fulfill the Megillah in English. But he says, what about Lashon HaKodesh? He says, Dibishlamo Lashon HaKodesh, who Lashon Mitzara Etzem. Lashon HaKodesh is an essential language. Masha'enken, Shar Lashon, but other languages are not essential languages. Einenu ki'im mitzar heskema medina. They get their status of language because people use them to communicate. V'kevin she'en anshe medina, zum makirim Lashon zeh, lo nikra Lashon klal. And if you don't understand it, so it's not a language. So he divides. He says, Lashon HaKodesh is an intrinsic language, whether or not you understand it. Other languages gain their status of language by virtue of the fact that they communicate with it. So if you can't understand, so it's not communicating to you, so then it is not going to fulfill your obligation. And that is what the Ritva writes as well. Okay, so far we've seen either the obligation or at least the value of learning Hebrew, and then we've seen a few halachic expressions of the value of Lashon HaKodesh, which brings us to the modern phenomenon of not Lashon HaKodesh, but of Ivrit. And the question that plagued people for about 100 years now is, okay, whatever Lashon HaKodesh is, obligation, value, does that translate into a mitzvah to speak modern Hebrew? So what do you think? Right, so let's go through some of the reasons, right? If
for the concept that Yisrael Ber said before, it's there.
Right, so if you think, right, that it's about creating an identity, so then it might be there. But what might also be there, right? If you think it's about keeping an identity, so we haven't yet explicitly said this, but if it's about keeping an identity, is Lashon HaKodesh important in and of itself?
It has those words in it, right, that the Rambam says.
Right, so we'll come back to the Rambam in a sense, but we'll stick with it, Yisrael Meir first, right? If it's about creating an identity, so what we didn't raise, but is the question that no one really thought of until the 20th century, is what happens if you speak a Jewish language which is not Lashon HaKodesh? Traditionally, Ladino or Yiddish, right? Really, we're going to talk about Yiddish, but the same thing could have been said about Ladino.
They call it Lashon Kodesh.
Yeah, they do.
Right. They call it Lashon Kodesh, right? Kodesh. Fine. Right? So what some of them are going to say is, well, wait a second. If it's about creating an identity, the identity of those who speak Jewish, so then we could speak Yiddish, which means Jewish, right? Now, that could open the possibility of speaking either Ivrit or Yiddish, right? But, and this is, right, leads to the other things, is what if, right, we hold like the Rambam, that the reason Lashon HaKodesh is holy is because it lacks certain types of words. What happens when you have created new words that now change Hebrew? So now we have two possibilities. Either you could say that Lashon HaKodesh remains Lashon HaKodesh, but the explicit words that have been entered into Hebrew from other languages are not holy. Right? That would be sort of the compromise position. Right? The extreme position would be Hebrew has no Kedusha because even though it looks and sounds like Lashon HaKodesh, the language as a whole is not holy at all. That's another possibility. Now let's take the position of the Ramban, that what makes it holy is that it's the language of God. the language of the Nevi'im. So now, leaving aside explicit words, we have a technical problem. What about words like, I don't know, we can take any of them. You know, televisa, radio, telephone. We could take no big deal to, right, to a priori, right, things from Latin, from English, from whatever language that might be, right, leaving aside the explicit ones, right, if you hold, like, the Ramban, so you might say, well, wait a second, this is not the language of God. God never said, ever, to Moshe, ze lo big deal. It never, right, it never happened. So is it holy? So one might say, no, or at least those words are not holy. One might say, though,
they are a transformation from holy words.
Correct, right? One might say no, right? Or the linguistic sort of scholarly way of saying is that language, by definition, develops, and therefore, right? It's not important that God didn't say no big deal, because in the end of the day, it is right. A natural development of Lashon HaKodesh, and when we say it's a holy language, it's not only the words that God said. It's a living language, and that is valuable. In fact, if one is a hardcore Zionist, might go farther and say, no, the fact that the language is alive is actually better, right? If it was stagnant, that would be bad, because then it would be a dead language. So we'll see all of these possibilities. So the first person that I know of that actually asked this question was Rav Baruch HaLevi Epstein, also known as the author of the Torah Tamima. In a book, he has a little book called Safa L'Ne'emanim. That's in 25. I put a few lines from it. Basically, Rav Baruch HaLevi Epstein, right? He's from a significant rabbinic family, right? He writes the Torah Tamima, which is a very important work. His father is an even more important rabbinic scholar, is the Aruch HaShulchan. Right? This is like a very rabbinic family. He himself is not professionally a rabbi. He's a banker. But he's a significant scholar, very much part of that world. He's he's related to the Netziv. He's related to the whole world in Litta. He's a very important person. He starts, like any good member of the Haredi world 100 years ago, as a staunch anti-Zionist. And that's how everybody starts. And then he slowly becomes a Zionist and becomes a member of Pohalei Tzion. Specifically the language organization called Pohalei Tzion, who became devoted to developing the Hebrew language, the modern Hebrew language. So he writes a book, a three-chapter book, it's very, very short, like 50 pages in big font, called Safa L'Ne'emanim, where he establishes in chapter 1 that there is an obligation to speak Hebrew. In the third chapter, the question he wants to deal with is, okay, assuming there's a value to speaking Hebrew, what is the status of words that come in from foreign languages? So he has an interesting compromise position. And he thinks as follows. He says, and he's dealing with a specific halachic question. Right? He's not just talking theoretically. Pohalei Tzion, one of the things they did was they created a Hebrew journal because they thought it was valuable for people to know Hebrew. So now he's giving guidance to the people who are writing in the journal. Let's say you're writing, and now you are at a loss for words because there's a word that doesn't exist in Hebrew. You have to write telegraph. Right? What do you do? Right? If I value Hebrew, so do I say, I don't even know how you would, in biblical Hebrew, describe a telegraph, but come up with some way of describing telegraph. Or do you just say telegraph, and that's it, and don't worry about the fact that that word is borrowed. So he has an interesting middle position. He says like this, Shimbala sofer ivrit davar echad o shem echad shibikarov atzmo chaser klal besad ivrit. If you get one word, which is from a foreign language, his simplest case, the names of things that didn't exist in the time of the Torah. Right? Phones, cars, trains, trucks, whatever. So you don't have to try to figure out how to say it in many words. Just say the foreign word, and that's part of Hebrew. And he proves it. He said, look in Chumash. V'yeter kidvei HaKodesh, or Tanakh, ba'u harbe milim misafot chol, shechaserim inyanam b'sfat Ivrit. There are a lot of borrowed words from other languages. And he brings an example. I didn't put it here, but his classic example is tefillin, right, totafot, according to Chazal, is from an African language. Now, whether or not it's from an African language historically, I have no idea. But the fact is, Chazal were willing to say that a word in the Torah was from African. So he said, you see that one word here and there, because you don't have the word in Lashon HaKodesh, not only can you use it, but it becomes part of Lashon HaKodesh, just like Totefot becomes the eternal word for Tefillin. V'amnam, zehu rak l'inyan mila achat. But that's for one word. Aval ma'amar o rayon shalem. But if you take a whole idea, or v'gam shtei milot, or even two words, which express an idea, yichashvu l'rayon shalem, that's like a full idea, kifi shehiranu, l'dati ein ra'ui lo l'havio misafa acheret. I think you shouldn't use it from the foreign language, b'pnei ki e'efshar shlo yeb efshar l'havio to be'efrit. Because once you're trying to deal with an expression, you can find a way of saying in Lashon HaKodesh, V'alkeinim oseh kazot b'vaday zoreh kilayim marev chulin b'kodesh. So if he doesn't, and he uses the foreign phrase, so then he's mixing the unholy into the holy. So he has this interesting middle position, right? One word at a time can be assimilated into Lashon HaKodesh, but full ideas cannot. Which is an interesting idea. It's an attempt at a compromise. But I think it's interesting. I'm not convinced, but it's an interesting possibility. A few of the modern sort of Zionist thinkers, and I found this one from Rav Shirky. I was talking to Rai Spitz, who also or Yair Spitz, not the one from the Bayit, right? Who said he was speaking to a scholar in Israel who thinks the same. He thinks that this is not true. No, he says, as we said before, no. The value of Hebrew is that it's a living language, and therefore even bringing in foreign ideas, they all become holy. And he writes, like this is from a website of Rav Shirky, right? Dvarav legabei Tara savat bemet nechonim. You're right. Hebrew is holy. Yesh mivocha legabei dvarim mesuyamim tanach misitim mealimud maosim. So the person had asked him, but what about all these words that come that are not from Tanakh? What do we do with them? And the questioner assumed that they're not holy. He says, no, dvaram in echonim, it's not right. I ain't Rambam beperish hamishn almashan shel chamisha lidromu shazavam mitpatachat. He proves the Rambam, in a comment in Trumo, is talking about a word which is borrowed from a foreign language, mentions sort of parenthetically that language, by definition, develops. He said, v'yerushalmi miforash. And he says, the Yerushalmi says it also, the Yerushalmi, in explaining why it is that the Chachamim, the Bavli and the Mishnah and the Yerushalmi don't look like the Hebrew, like the Hebrew of the Chumash, they say, Lashon Torah l'chod, Lashon Chachamim l'chod. The language of the Torah is one, the language of Chazal is another, which implies language develops to the point where Chazal didn't speak the language of the Torah. No one ever said Chazal weren't speaking Lashon HaKodesh. He says, Gam alfei lim yevaniyot latiniyot uparsot uchnasu leivrit besavur namishnav ad mirdar shem. He says, there are thousands of Latin words and Greek words and Persian words that enter the Hebrew of the Mishnah. So then the person asks again, Haim Khadirat Milim Misvot Shonot Mavebaya, does that cause a problem? He says, Lo, Kanal. No, it doesn't. And earlier in the piece he says, and this is the Zionist dream that we should bring the dead language back to life. So he sort of takes what the Safal Eminem started and takes it to the logical extreme. No. Lashon HaKodesh, however it's valuable, can actually increase its word count, and they will all become holy by being integrated into Lashon HaKodesh. All the way to the other extreme, the Divrei Yatziv, right, the Klosenberger, in his defense of why you should specifically speak Yiddish and not Lashon HaKodesh, not Ivris, right, he says, you'll see what he does with this, right, takes the Rambam-esque position and the extreme Rambam-esque position, right? We said the extreme Rambam-esque position would be that if Lashon HaKodesh is holy because it lacks explicit words, then once you mess with the language, not only are those words unholy, but speaking that whole language, that mess called Ivris, is forbidden. It's an Avera. Note, Avera and Ivris. That's about what he's going to do. He says, L'kach b'vaday shechas v'shalom laniach svat avotenu midor dor. God forbid we should leave the language of our forefathers, Yiddish. U'leshamesh b'lshonam shel ovrei avera. And lose the language of those sinners. V'ulai l'kach korim ivrit. And that's why it's called ivrit. Lashon, nofel al lashon. It is an avera.
Was this written in Hebrew?
Yes. Yes. Yes, it is. Virov hamilin badum milibam rachman. It's on emotional words they invented. V'im yesh bo bituyim shel lashon hakodesh. But you'll tell me, but wait a second, 95% of the language or 90% of the language is lashon hakodesh. Od magbir ha'isur, that makes it worse, because now you're contaminating lashon hakodesh. Ve'ele v'rechev ve'ele basusim v'anachnu b'shem Hashem Elokeinu naskir v'nelech b'derkei avotenu hakdoshim v'lenasur midivrehem yamin u'smol afilu yomru al yamin shu'smol v'smol shul yamin. And they will, right, and then he's very poetic, they will go with their horses and their power, we will go with God and we will speak Yiddish. And this comes to a combination of the Rambam-esque point and the culture point, right? Because he opposes Ivrit on the Rambam-esque grounds, right? That it is a Tameh language now, and he endorses Yiddish on the Smag-esque grounds, right? If you think that Lashon HaKodesh is valuable because it gives you a culture, so if the second Hebrew is not an option, so Yiddish is a better option because it accomplishes the same value, right? And so this was the thing we didn't spell out before. But if you think that the value of Lashon HaKodesh is it allows you to develop a Jewish culture, in theory, one could say that one could use an alternative language and potentially that alternative language over Lashon, what we call Lashon HaKodesh. Another possibility in the Hasidic world, and this will end, the person who wrote most systematically about his opposition was Rav Yoel Teitelbaum, was the Satmar Rebbe. He has a kuntres called Ma'amar Lashon HaKodesh, and many other articles that he wrote as well. Here, I took the English translation. Whatever, that was, you know, I felt that his opposition to Hebrew didn't have to be read in Hebrew. This is from a piece analyzing his position. So he actually adds a few arguments, which we haven't seen yet. And he says like this, language is of great value to those whose whole speech is holy, and conversely, to those who sin in their speech, it is more disgusting than the law's eyes, is the holy tongue, right? That we already saw. That's the Divrei Yatziv following the Hasidish party line here. Because it is certainly a major imperative for the pious to know the language, but to accustom the folk to speak that holy language, the holy tongue, is impossible. As the sins of speech, now he adds, which the Divrei Yatziv didn't say, it's not just that it makes it unholy when you add unholy words into it. He thinks that because Hebrew is holy, if you say improper things in Lashon HaKodesh, that would be more sinful than saying it in a foreign language. And since most people are going to say things which are inappropriate, so we should avoid anything which resembles Lashon HaKodesh. So he says, but to accustom, and this sort of is the Ramban-esque position, right? If you think that the language is intrinsically holy, it's God's language, you don't want to mess it up by speaking other things in it. So he says, but to accustom the folk to speak the holy tongue is impossible, as the sins of speech, even in foreign tongues, are horrendous. Mendacity, evil talk, bad language, eroticism, thus if they grow used to speaking the holy language, our sins will only be greater. It, the holy tongue, is only that which comes by prophecy. And undoubtedly, even if the sage of the Talmud has added some words. And now the second critique is he thinks that modern Hebrew is not Lashon HaKodesh because it adds foreign words. So how do you respond to the fact that Chazal also did? He says, even if the sage of the Talmud added some words which were not truly of the holy tongue but their own coinages, they have sanctity as the sages drew inspiration from a sacred place and everything they said was uttered in their houses of study in a spirit of understanding and sanctity. But what the free thinkers have coined to add to the language is totally impure, and impure may not be mixed with pure. The third thing he says, the land of Israel and the holy tongue Hebrew, which are higher privileges, were taken from us at the time of the destruction of the temple. And here's the Torah Tamima perspective coming out, that Lashon HaKodesh is valuable in Israel, but for the Satmar Rebbe, that means Israel when we're allowed to be in Israel, but he thinks we're not. So now, he partially was actually responded to Torah Tamima, so he uses his own position against him and says, if the value is to create a Jewish identity in the land of Israel, that doesn't mean in the land per se, it means in the legitimate halachic state, not the modern state, and therefore he says, since that was taken from us at the time of the destruction of the temple, because we were not worthy of them, and it will be restored at the redemption, which will be much higher and greater as redemption itself, which is the end goal of creation, is the time when God will reign forever, meaning that's when we can speak Lashon HaKodesh. So, right, what you see is that all sort of the background to why is there a mitzvah or a value to speak in Lashon HaKodesh comes into sharp relief in this modern question of, okay, when we move from Lashon HaKodesh to modern Hebrew, is it a mitzvah, an avera, what is it? Right. So we saw, right, just to summarize, we saw that there were those who thought that it was a mitzvah and those who thought it wasn't, but everyone thought there was a value in Lashon HaKodesh. There were those who thought that it was valuable because it allows you to learn Torah. No one seems to have disagreed with that point. But the question of whether there's a mitzvah to learn it otherwise, so there were a few possibilities. Some people thought that the reason it's a mitzvah is because it allows you to create a Jewish identity in one of two ways, either creating a state or separating from the non-Jews. So those who oppose modern Hebrew argued that those goals can be better accomplished by Yiddish for two reasons. One, our state is not legitimate, right? The Satmar Rebbe's position, therefore his language and Zionist position overlap. And the Dirayatsev and the Satmar Rebbe's point that now Hebrew is the language of the irreligious, so to separate ourselves from them, we need a new language, i.e. Yiddish. If you think that the holiness of Lashon HaKodesh is that it doesn't have sensitive words, so again, the Divrei Yatzev can say, well, maybe ours does. And you could have taken the mitigated position that only those words are not holy, but he takes it that the whole language becomes not holy. But if you take the notion that it's holy because God said it, so then one could, in theory, say that the added words are not holy, and that's what the Satmar Rebbe says. One could take a sort of minimalist position like the Safalem and Emanim, that single words can be integrated, but new ideas can't be integrated. Or one can take what's probably the most common sense view, is that Lashon HaKodesh may originally be the language that God spoke, but if it's meant to live on, it's a living language, and living language needs to include new words to deal with new concepts and new objects and new ideas. And that also becomes integrated into Lashon HaKodesh, which is again the position of many of the modern Zionist thinkers. So that's sort of just a brief overview of the issues. I'll just make one point, then we'll do questions. The interesting thing is that what we've noted here, and this was one of the things that Moshe pointed out, is that how we approach language is often indicative of how we think about things. So the book that I read, despite its, you know, it being written sort of dryly, right, it does point out that the way the four groups that it analyzed four different Haredi groups in Israel, their approach to language both influences and is influenced by their view of the world. And he analyzes their position, specifically Ger, the Misnagdim, Chabad, and the Sfaradim, the Sfaradi Haredim in Israel. And he notes that Chabad, who the central value in their life is Kiruv, right, language becomes, Lashon HaKodesh or Yiddish become devalued because they value not being insular, right, which is, right, the Reyaziv, but communicating. So they find value in learning whatever the spoken language is, Ivrit, English, French, whatever it might be, right? The Ger Hasidim, who've always been the least insular of the Hasidim, right, and the most amenable to modern culture, right, as opposed to the Satmar Hasidim, the Ger Rebbes were known for speaking modern Hebrew. The Misnagdim, at the beginning, were known for having a sort of love-hate relationship with the state, but not actually being opposed to Zionism per se, which has led in the Misnagdish community to them mostly speaking Hebrew, and in some blazing token in the yeshiva speaking Yiddish, but that's slowly going out because, again, they're not committed to staying separate from the state, so they adopt the language of the state. And the Sfaradim, who are not part of the Hasidic milieu at all, it never entered their mind, right, are totally comfortable in Hebrew. To contrast, let's say, what we see of the Satmars and the Kloisenbergers, who were more standoffish, who were more separate from the state, right? Their political viewpoints, their religious viewpoint of the state, affect how they speak. And he draws the connections between language politics and Hashkafa in general, which is one of the things to think about when dealing with it, right? That these discussions don't take place in a vacuum. They take place in a more general and cultural milieu. Yeah.
A couple things. I find it funny that I forget who and where he was. The Torah Tamima was talking about in the Safal Lanemanim, talked about, well, you know, make up, you know, let's use loan words from other languages for things that we don't have our own words for. Because didn't Eliezer ben Yehuda specifically try to come up with Hebrew words for all those things?
There is a word for telephone
in Hebrew.
Correct. Yeah, it's funny. I mean, Eliezer ben Yehuda did. It ended up not really working.
No.
And also, one of the things that people didn't love, the Sefer Elohim doesn't actually discuss it directly, but other people did, is he doesn't think it's much better to manipulate a Hebrew word. Like, chashmal, going from meaning, you know, the fiery angels, to electricity, is no more true to the Hebrew than just, you know, saying... You know, if we'd chosen to say the Hebrew word for electricity is electricity, right? So some of the right, so it's not something that he addresses, but other people address it. That using misappropriating a Hebrew word is basically the same from a, you know, philosophical standpoint, let's say, as using an English word, right? Why is turning chashmal into right a word for electricity any better than saying electricity? It's not a right. There's nothing about the word chashmal that leads to electricity, except that he sort of, I guess, imagined, you know, chashmal as this like, you know, fiery angel, so this is fiery magic, right? But, right, so that's, I mean, it's an interesting point, but the critique of Eliezer ben Yehuda was that, is that it's, you know, misappropriating is just as bad as taking in a...
And the other thing is that I just wanted to say that Ramban's position is based on Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, right.
I mean, he doesn't quote Rabbi Yehuda Halevi here, but Rabbi Yehuda Halevi says basically the same thing. Yes, Rabbi Yehuda Halevi has many, many passages in the Kuzari talking about that same point, that it's holy because it's the word of the Nevi'im, the word of God. Yeah.
Just to understand, I mean, not to get too involved in it, but I just wanted to the Satmar Rebbe. So when Mashiach comes, what is Lashon HaKodesh?
Like, I assume it's biblical Hebrew. I assume that's what he's, you know.
Right.
And what he plans to do. Like, I don't know what he plans to do with he never articulated that theory, best of my knowledge.
So then, also to understand, so what is Yiddish to him, to the Klosenbergs? Is that Lashon HaKodesh?
The holiest of Lashon HaKodesh is still Lashon biblical HaKodesh. Hebrew.
Right.
But they, and that's the Satmar Rebbe's other thing, is that, so you could say, okay, so speak biblical Hebrew, right? He says, no, I don't want to speak biblical Hebrew because it's too holy to use in modern speech. So, in theory, I would use Lashon HaKodesh, but I'll use the next best thing that's not quite as holy, but accomplishes the other goals, which is Yiddish.
Right?
So that's the way they sort of parse it.
So they couldn't, if he was able to develop, like, just a pure Lashon HaKodesh, just Hebrew without...
Right, so he probably, the standard, like, Satmar position is that you wouldn't until we were at a point where we were righteous enough to use Lashon HaKodesh. Otherwise, we'll use Yiddish, which accomplishes the identity thing, doesn't have the, you know, is a relatively clean language, has a lot of the values without having the danger of being the actual word of God, and therefore being, you know...
Right.
You know, we'll get smitten down if we say something wrong in it the way we would Lashon HaKodesh, right? It's a way of sort of splitting the difference, right? That's, right, if you look through the Divrei Yatziv, is a few chuvos on it, right? But that's sort of the feeling you get, that he's trying, I would love to speak Lashon HaKodesh, but...
They're all writing in Hebrew.
Well, right, meaning Lashon HaKodesh remains, like, biblical... Right, meaning, and the written
language,
especially, right? The language, like, biblical rabbinic Hebrew remains the language of writing because it is holy, and it's, so for Torah, it's legitimate, right? For speech, they are hesitant to use Yiddish. Yeah.
The Satmar write in Yiddish. They don't write in biblical Hebrew.
Correct. It depends what they're writing. Well, I mean, Mamar Lashon HaKodesh.
They write letters in...
Right. But, like, Mamar Lashon HaKodesh is in... Lashon HaKodesh, but like Svarim, like it's Svarim, like not necessarily a Sichot, but is okay. Like Svarim are written in rabbinic Hebrew, you know, Lishna Derabanan, right? Because Torah, you're allowed to speak the holy tongue. Okay.